All right, diving in today, getting right into it, we've got a case straight from the Tennessee Supreme Court. And let me tell you, this one's a doozy.
Oh, yeah.
It's Hamblin v. Davidson. On the surface, you know, STD transmission might sound kind of cut and dry, right?
Right.
But this decision, it really digs into some really fundamental stuff in tort law. Negligence, to be specific.
Negligence. Interesting.
Yeah. It's fascinating. And honestly, you walk away feeling a lot more informed.
Yeah. I think what's so important about this case, Hamblin v. Davidson, it's not just about the specifics of, you know, what happened between these two people.
Right.
It really gives you a powerful lens, I mean, to understand huge concepts. Like, when does the clock actually start ticking? Legally speaking, on an injury? What duties do we really have to each other, especially in these really close relationships? And how do courts, I mean, how do they even wrap their heads around proving something like cause and effect?
Right, cause and effect, yeah. When a lot of times the evidence is kind of murky, you know? Not so clear. Yeah, especially in personal relationships.
Absolutely.
And that's, I think, what makes this case so fascinating, because we're not talking about, you know, a fender bender. We're talking about something that happened within a marriage.
Exactly. Really personal stuff.
So by the end of this deep dive, I'm confident you are going to have a much clearer grasp on some pretty key legal concepts. You know, the discovery rule, duty of care when it comes to STDs, and how sometimes, you know, you don't have that smoking gun. You have to rely on circumstantial evidence.
It's all about connecting those dots.
Exactly. Exactly. So to set the scene, we're dealing with a lawsuit that Pam Hamblin filed against her ex-husband, Richard Davidson. And she's alleging that he infected her with herpes during their marriage. And like I said, it's a negligence claim. You could see the same thing in a car accident case, you know.
Like
someone's not being careful, they cause harm. But here, it's playing out in like the most intimate part of their lives.
Right, right.
Their marriage. Okay, so let's get to the facts. What actually went down?
All right, so we got to go back in time a bit. Pam Hamblin and Richard Davidson, they tied the knot back in 1973.
Okay.
So picture it. It's the 70s.
Okay.
Then, zoom forward a couple decades, 1994 rolls around, and we find out that Davidson had an affair.
An affair.
Yeah. And between 1995 and 1997, Hamblin starts experiencing these, you know, genital rashes.
Oh.
Now, here's where it gets interesting. Davidson, he also had a rash around the same time.
He did.
Yeah, but he kind of brushed it off, just said it was poison ivy.
Oh, wow.
And it's not until 1997, after Hamblin watches a TV show about herpes, you know, one of those health programs,
right,
that she starts to think, maybe my rashes are something more.
I see.
She gets tested and bam, confirmed it's herpes. And for context, Hamblin had said she only had one sexual partner before she married Davidson.
Okay, so we've got the affair. We've got both of them having these rashes, but he kind of dismisses it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, boom, years later, she finds out. What did the trial court do with all of this?
So the trial court actually granted Davidson something called a summary judgment.
A summary judgment, for those of us who don't speak legalese.
Yeah, so basically it's like the court hitting the brakes before a full-blown trial. They're saying there just isn't enough evidence here to even go to trial.
Okay.
And they had three main reasons for this. First, they said the statute of limitations, you know, that deadline for filing a lawsuit, it had already passed.
Okay, right, right.
In Tennessee, back then, you generally had 1 year for these kinds of personal injury claims. Second, the trial court said, look, Hamblin hasn't really shown us that Davidson knew he had herpes.
Right.
And third, they said there's not enough proof that Davidson directly caused her infection.
Yeah, they're like, nope, case closed.
Pretty much, yeah.
But obviously, we're here talking about Hamblin v. Davidson.
Exactly.
So clearly, that's not where it ended. What happened next?
Hamblin, she wasn't giving up. She took her case to the Tennessee Court of Appeals. And this is where things get really interesting. Because the appellate court flipped the script. They reversed the trial court's decision.
Wow. Okay, so the appellate court saw it totally differently. But before we dive into why they reversed it, let's lay out exactly what they were looking at. What were the big legal questions they had to untangle?
All right, so there were three main issues on the table. First, they had to figure out if the trial court messed up by saying the statute of limitations had run out.
Okay.
This all boils down to understanding the discovery rule, and it can get a little tricky.
I bet.
Second, they had to look at whether the trial court was wrong to say there wasn't a real dispute about Davidson's knowledge of his condition.
Okay, so did he know or should he have known, essentially?
Exactly. Was that a real point of disagreement that needed to be settled at a trial?
Right.
And then the third big question, was the trial court wrong to say there wasn't enough proof that Davidson's actions caused Hamblin's herpes?
Causation.
Yep.
Okay, so those are our three biggies. Statute of limitations, Davidson's knowledge, and causation.
You got it.
And we know the Court of Appeals sided with Hamblin on all three of them. Let's break it down, starting with that statute of limitations issue and this whole discovery rule thing. What's the deal with that?
Okay, so the basics, the general rule in Tennessee was you had 1 year to file a lawsuit for personal injury. But there's this exception, this discovery rule, which says that 1 year clock doesn't start ticking until the person who's hurt finds out, or reasonably should have found out, two things.
Okay.
One, that they're actually injured.
Right.
And two, what caused that injury.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So Hamblin, she's arguing that, yeah, she had these rashes back in 95, but she didn't put two and two together.
Didn't connect the dots.
Yeah, she didn't connect them to herpes or think that maybe Davidson had something to do with it until way later in 97.
After the TV show.
Exactly, after that TV show.
Yeah.
So she's saying she didn't really know what was wrong or what caused it until then.
Interesting. So it's not just enough to know you're hurt. You got to know what did the hurting.
Exactly. That's the discovery rule in a nutshell.
Yeah. Did the court just take her word for it, though?
Well, not exactly. The appellate court, they said whether or not Hamblin acted reasonably in figuring this all out, that's actually a question for the jury.
Oh, okay.
Not something a judge can just decide on their own in a summary judgment.
I see.
Basically, they said there's a real disagreement here about when Hamblin should have known, and a jury needs to hear all the evidence and make a call.
Okay, that makes sense. So the discovery rule gave her a chance to make her case.
Right.
Now, let's tackle issue number two, whether Davidson had a duty of care to Hamblin.
Okay.
And this all hinges on whether he knew or should have known that he had herpes. Hmm. Can you give us a crash course on the elements of negligence and how this whole duty thing fits into the picture here?
Sure. So to win a negligence case, you usually have to prove four things.
Okay.
Duty.
Okay.
Breach of that duty,
mm-hmm.
causation,
mm-hmm.
and damages.
So you got to show someone had a responsibility, they screwed up, that screw up caused the harm, and there was actual harm done.
You got it.
All right.
Now, duty means that you have a legal obligation to act reasonably towards someone else. And with STDs, the court looked at how other states have handled this and sided with the majority view.
Okay.
They said if you know or should know that you have an STD, then you have a duty to be careful and not spread it.
Okay, so you have a responsibility to protect your partner.
Exactly. You can't just say, oh, we're intimate, so all bets are off.
Right.
Especially when it comes to something as serious as someone's health.
So the duty exists if you know or should know. How did the court apply that to Davidson?
Because remember, we don't necessarily have hard proof that he knew for sure he had herpes.
Right, right.
But the court zeroed in on a couple of things. First, that affair back in 94.
Okay.
Which, you know, that's risky behavior when it comes to STDs.
Yeah.
And then there's the fact that he also had those symptoms, that rash he dismissed as poison ivy.
Right.
So the court's thinking is a jury could look at all this and say, maybe he did know. Or at least he should have known and done something about it, like get tested and tell his wife.
Right. Especially with the affair and the matching symptoms.
Exactly. So again, the appellate court said summary judgment wasn't the right call here.
Makes sense.
There's a genuine question about what Davidson knew that a jury needs to decide.
Okay, on to the last piece of the puzzle then, causation.
All right, causation. This is a tricky one, especially with STDs.
It seems really hard to prove.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to pinpoint the exact source of the infection.
Right.
Especially if there's any chance of other sexual partners in the mix. The trial court said Hamblin hadn't given them enough solid proof to link her herpes to Davidson. But the appellate court made a really big statement here. They said you don't always need an expert doctor to come in and say, yep, Davidson did it for a herpes case.
Really?
Yeah. They're acknowledging that these situations are often really private and saying, look, sometimes common sense and the circumstances are enough to figure out who's probably responsible.
That's a pretty big change from what you'd expect in other personal injury cases.
Not really.
So how's Hamblin supposed to prove it without a doctor specifically pointing the finger?
Well, the appellate court said, look at the circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
Hamblin's saying they had a long marriage and she was monogamous until his affair.
Okay.
Then her symptoms pop up pretty soon after the affair happened.
Right.
And around the time he was having symptoms too.
Oh, right, right.
And then, of course, there's his own rash. The court said a jury could look at all that and reasonably conclude that Davidson was the likely source of her herpes.
Yeah, that seems pretty reasonable.
Right.
So did they just ignore the possibility that she could have gotten herpes from someone else?
No, they acknowledged that's a possibility.
Okay.
But they said that's exactly the kind of question a jury is supposed to figure out.
Right.
It's fascinating how they're basically saying you can connect the dots with all these pieces of evidence. You don't necessarily need a smoking gun.
It shows how the law has to work with real-life situations that aren't always black and white.
Absolutely, especially when you're dealing with people's private lives.
So, just to sum it up, the appellate court was basically saying, trial court, pump the brakes.
Yeah.
There's enough here about when Hamblin should have known, whether Davidson should have known, and whether he likely caused the infection. A jury needs to hear all of this.
Exactly. They basically said, it's not a slam dunk for Davidson. We need to have a trial.
So they lowered the bar for Hamblin to get her day in court.
Right.
By focusing on the discovery rule, emphasizing that risky behavior plus symptoms could equal duty, and saying circumstantial evidence can be enough for causation.
Exactly. They made it harder to get these cases dismissed early on without all the facts coming out.
Okay, so what are the big, big takeaways from Hamblin v. Davidson? What do people really need to understand about this case?
I'd say there are three major points to walk away with. First, the discovery rule is a real deal in Tennessee, even for STDs. This means the clock might not start until you truly understand your injury and its cause.
Okay.
Second, knowing you have symptoms, especially if you're doing risky things, like having an affair, that can be enough to show you had a duty to protect your partner.
Okay.
You don't have to admit you knew. The circumstances can speak for themselves.
Interesting.
And third, for herpes cases, you don't always need a doctor to connect the dots. The whole picture, the relationship, the timing of symptoms, the defendant's own health issues, that can all be enough for a jury to say, yeah, this person probably caused the infection.
So what was the overall impact of this decision? Did it change things in Tennessee?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hamblin v. Davidson made it a lot harder for defendants in STD cases to get those early dismissals. It shifted the power to the jury, saying they're the ones who should be weighing the evidence in these situations.
So it's a really good example of how those classic tort law ideas, duty, breach, causation, damages play out in these really personal and messy situations.
Right, exactly. It's a good reminder that negligence isn't just about fender benders. It can pop up anywhere, even in our closest relationships.
So Hamblin v. Davidson, it's way more than just a divorce and a herpes infection.
Right.
It's a lesson in how the law tackles those tricky gray areas in our personal lives.
Absolutely.
And I think it leaves us with a lot to think about.
Definitely. I mean, what about personal responsibility in relationships? Where do we draw the line on accountability?
Yeah.
What if some of the facts in the Hamblin case had been different? Would the outcome have changed?
Right, right. It really makes you think about how the law handles these sensitive situations.
For sure. It's a reminder that the law is always evolving, trying to keep up with the complexities of real life.
That's a great point. And on that note, we'll wrap up our depth dive into Hamblin v. Davidson. Until next time, keep those legal minds churning.